Okay, this is the Chicago way, Game of Thrones way. Okay? I can't think of a pithy
Cast of Thrones.
The Cast of Thrones or, you know, I don't know. I can't because I'm so excited about this episode and the one to come. All right? We are what? With me are my Game of Thrones bannermen.
There
okay?
you go. Yep, yep.
Marwa Altaguri and Will Lee. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
And thank you so much for doing this because I'm such a nerd, and we would be doing this, everybody, by Will's desk or Marwa's desk. They sit right next to each other, and everyone comes up and gets their fill right there. Okay, so let's start. We are going into episode
four,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And all I know is this. Somebody's going to get their throat cut with that dagger. The dagger, see in the
trailer
for this next episode, is the same dagger that was used to try to kill young Brandon Stark when the wolf saved his life and that of his mother. And now it looks like it's in Littlefinger's hand. Marwa, what do you see there?
Well, I think what everyone's wondering is what Littlefinger is going to do next, because we've seen in the last three episodes he's just been...
Is he the mayor? I'm just wondering, is that one we could give to the mayor, Littlefinger?
Grasping for something, like trying to latch onto someone, trying to manipulate someone, and everyone's rejecting him. So if this dagger comes back into play, the question is... What use is it? Is Littlefinger going to use it himself? Does Littlefinger still have that dagger?
Littlefinger's hand.
Yeah, but the last
person Not that
person
I really I've, watch men's hands up close, but I'm just saying.
I mean, I remember, I think I last, I thought the dagger was last with Catelyn Stark. Hmm. But did we see someone use it more recently than that, Will?
Well, I remember Littlefinger... I calling it out to say that it was his dagger in the first place after it happened, but then placing it with Tyrion. After that, the sort of chain of custody kind of falls apart.
It went to the Vale. It was used in the trial. Catelyn Stark had it, and then, therefore, Bronn, who is actually the rumored lover of Cersei. They were lovers, and now they hate each other. They're not even on the set.
So that's together. On the Game of Thrones bucket list, is are we going to see Cersei and Bronn in a scene together just to kind of disprove all of this?
Oh,
I don't think so.
Another one. Anybody see When Harry Met Sally?
I did.
Right. Did you ever see Sleepless in Seattle, Jeff Carlin?
Oh, of course.
Did you ever see, what's another good love story? Pretty Princess, or that's the hooker becomes Cinderella. What's that story?
Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman. Right. All these stories have
Die
something.
Hard, that's a good love story, right?
All right, right. Yes. All these stories have something in common. Boy meets girl, girl meets boy. And there's a certain sexual tension that begins immediately. Anybody notice that with Daenerys Stormborn and her little turned up little mouth, her little smile, winsome smile, and Jon Snow, you know nothing, when they met? Didn't you think, well... When are they going to do it?
I don't get it.
When are they going to become lovers?
Oh,
my
no.
God.
You know, I can imagine when the scene unfolded, I actually imagined it as George R.R. Martin would have, you know, written it. And the way I think I noticed immediately is how they're both kind of getting a sense of each other. You know, I think Jon Snow sees her and says she's much more beautiful than I anticipate a Targaryen who I've never seen before.
She may be beautiful, but there's only the wall.
Right. There's always only the wall. And for her, I think when she saw him, she's hearing all of these things about what a great man, and he's not that much older than she is.
Right.
So it's kind of like them trying to figure out, you know, he's just this sort of dirty northerner, you know, but somehow.
Dressed in animal skins.
Yeah, the fur. I think I really liked this exchange because I agree with you. I think this is how George R. R. Martin would have written it. I mean, everyone was anticipating, like, Dany and Jon are going to see each other and they're going to fall in love instantly and it's just going to work out so perfectly. And I was like, no, like, they're going to be so, you know, I mean, I loved how Jon looked at Daenerys and just saw this, like, rich Targaryen girl who has who's claiming the throne but doesn't understand the bigger problems of Westeros. And she's looking at him and saying, like, no, you don't know what I went through to get here. And
check
you're
your
talking
privilege,
about a dead
John.
Army. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I my parents plowed with mules or something. Right.
And that's how it should have been. For them to mutually understand each mm-hmm. other's conquests and mm-hmm. goals, that would have been unrealistic. So I liked how this
but
kind
it
of
begins,
played out.
Begins, right. There's all these issues that we have to go through, but it begins as a little kind of dance, right? Like all great romances. And I just see it happening.
For centuries, our families fought together against their common enemy, despite their differences, together. We need to do the same if we're going to survive. Because the enemy is real. It's always been real.
Okay, so let's recap this last episode looking towards the future, okay?
Oh, yes.
So, what about Lady Olana? Or what's her name? Not Olana?
Olana.
Olana. I'm so sad we're losing Diana Rigg. She's just fantastic.
She was so hot when I was a boy in her leather
Emma Peel
cat suit. Or was it vinyl?
I think it was vinyl, probably.
Probably vinyl. I didn't know the
cost
difference.
Saving.
When you're like 12, you don't even think.
Not
can't
pertinent.
Even enter it. And now she's a old crone who's... Yeah. Sipped her last.
She did it perfectly.
Chugged
that was
her last.
Vicious.
She did it perfectly.
She chugged it, right?
Yeah,
didn't
she chugged her last.
She chugged it in the second, the very second it all went down, she says, I wouldn't want to have died like your son did. And I was like, oh, here it comes.
Oh,
you know?
It was so fantastic.
Wasn't it?
It was amazing.
The only thing she missing from that scene was her for her to say, in my dying breath, I spit at thee. Or something like from Milton, right? You know, something like that. Or from Khan.
It was just such a great scene, though. Like, you could just see Jamie's face just kind of turn as it was kind of like it reminded me of that scene when Cersei was dealing with the High Sparrow and suddenly realizing that the tables were turning on her and that she was going to get locked up. And it just reminded me of that. It was just so, you know, you could see it in Jamie realizing, you know, Tyrion was innocent. My brother was innocent this whole time. He's not the one who killed Joffrey. Cersei went after Tyrion for no reason. It was the Tyrells the whole time. You could just see it in his face, and I thought
do you
that
think
was incredible.
He believed? Do you think? I don't think he ever believed that his brother did it.
I think he started to.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because I think it was after he killed Tywin that he thought, oh, Tyrion must have killed Joffrey, and maybe he just played me or something like that. I think that this whole scene is Olenna planting a seed in Jaime's head that Cersei is turning into a monster, and she tells him that,
right.
And then he realizes Tyrion is innocent, and I think we're kind of start to see the wheels spin on Jaime turning on Cersei.
She is a monster because she kisses the daughter of her enemy with the same poison that was
used
against
God.
Her. Right?
That was one of the best death scenes. I mean, no one really died, but one of the best torturous scenes ever. She's just so cold-blooded.
It was a great reaction. It was a fantastic reaction of when the kiss happened. You could see mother and daughter kind of saying, oh, this is it.
Right.
This is the kiss of death that we've...
And the way Cersei talked to her, I hope you can understand that I know you love your daughter. And she went on and on like a spider. And I'm thinking, perfect. This is why the Game of Thrones works. It uses our modern sensibilities of what we know to be a middle manager or a boss, right, who's webbing you in before the kill, mm-hmm. or something like that. We can mm-hmm. recognize these personalities. So, okay, what else happens?
Well, as far as this going forward, the question is, a lot of the Game of Thrones readers have been asking, was it a mistake to leave the Ilaria alive? Because
Ilaria Sands.
Sands, right.
She's in the dungeon watching, waiting for her daughter to die from the poison that Cersei
instructed
gave
to watch her daughter rot.
Right.
Yeah, and rot.
Yeah. Day by day.
Yeah.
And the question is, well, is Yara Greyjoy there as well? Is she in the dungeons waiting there? Because it looked like Theon might be trying to mount a rescue, you know.
Well, she was taking Yara, the I don't know how to describe her, Leather Pants,
yes,
the show.
Right. Queen of Iron Island.
Well, yes, Iron, definitely. She was brought away as the slave of Urien, right?
He took
her back. All right, so we've got what happens next in the next show?
Jorah, he's going to come back. And
Jorah, the two best friends save each other.
Mm-hmm.
Jon Snow, his best friend, Samuel Tarly, Samuel, or whatever his name is.
Right.
Samuel Ganji, Samuel Tarly. I get them all mixed up.
There you go.
I love Sam this season. Sam is just a hero. I can't believe he did it. He cured Grayscale. And it was just so it was so reminiscent of Harry Potter to me, where they were like, they gave him like a punishment because he did something good. And it just reminded me of that quote from Harry Potter, which goes, you know, you could get killed or worse, expelled, like that one. And I just felt like you're
and
lucky.
That's what he said,
you're
right?
Lucky you didn't get expelled.
Your punishment is that you're not expelled, your reward. Yeah,
and,
right?
And good for Sam. Now he's moved up from cleaning bedpans to transcribing other people's works.
That.
And but I think as journalists, we all kind of felt that. We were like, ooh, he has to transcribe. Oh.
A ton. Also, Arya comes home.
Okay.
Or does she?
Well, that's kind of the catch. We see her arrive with Winterfell and Horizon. But
she's on the same hill behind her. There's a little dip in the hill. And that's where Stannis Baratheon's army was killed in the last season.
Right.
Right? So she's on the verge of Winterfell.
Right.
Yeah.
Yet another Stark sibling home for the, you know, for the long night.
So, let's hope this one goes better than Sansa and Bran's reunion.
Yeah.
Oh, so she's not going to see Jon. She's going to see Sansa or Bran. Right?
Probably both of them. I would assume that Bran's staying in Winterfell.
Right.
Bran.
For a little bit of time.
You're all upset with Bran.
Did we talk
about this, or was this before the show?
Yeah, this is pre-show.
Pre-show Game of Thrones nerdgasms. Marwa is upset with Bran.
I just felt like he was so cold, and I understand he's been through a lot. I understand he's the Three-Eyed Raven now. He's got this mission. And he just doesn't have room for the emotion, but this is your sister, and because you've seen her go through those tragedies that you just decided to immediately, you know, recall for her, it makes me think that, you know, well, why are you doing that?
You mean, why did he bring up the fact that, well, is he sitting there like a lump, like a basically expressionist.
Yeah.
Expressionist, right. Saying,
why are you being so
cold? You were so,
cold?
Beautiful when you were in white and it was snowing on your wedding day.
Can I defend Bran? Can I be the person to defend Bran?
Please do.
Please. Because here's the thing. You guys don't understand what it means to be the Three-Eyed Raven man. Because
Well, can you explain? Or will it take too long to explain?
Pardon me.
I was born to explain.
That's Will Lee channeling Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now. Okay? As we all know. Anyway,
sure.
Will, go on.
Yeah, you picked up on that. Thank you,
John. Yeah, I did.
It's the idea that he's seeing everything. He's not seeing, you know, he did kind of pick on it. He's seeing bits and pieces, but he's seeing bits and pieces of everything. Things that you don't want to see, things about his sister being, you know, violated in their home, seeing things about his aunt Lyanna and the Prince Rhaegar,
The prince who was promised?
The prince who was promised, or princess, whatever. It's having all of these things just kind of, you know, come into his mind. I think it's completely warped him. He's lost all sort of touch with humanity in a sort of way. He doesn't understand, you know, he's just getting all of it and he has to be the vessel for it. I think anytime you're the vessel, you lose a little bit something of your humanity.
Our young Padawan has touched on something.
I have a better analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Better.
I say better. The analogy is that Bran essentially has gone away to Ivy League school, got a master's degree, and had to come home and is like, I know too much. I'm too important. I don't really care about you.
I don't have time to explain.
I've got bigger things to
Father,
do.
Father, how could you pour that brandy without warming it first, the cognac?
You guys are so harsh.
All right, you're wrong.
I was just like, I don't understand why it's too difficult to explain to Sansa. And then the first thing you decide to tell her that you know about her is this horrible PTSD moment. And I just thought the whole thing
I've seen everything, including
because, okay, may I offer? Because all of you are right. But put it in the larger context, okay? He knows the future and the past. He knows what people do. He knows what Sansa will do. He knows what his brothers and sisters will do to each other or to their enemies or have done to them. And armed with that understanding of future, he doesn't want to react to them because he knows he's responsible for Hodor.
Ah.
Hodor. He got in that whole loop. Remember the mental loop, and he created poor Hodor. If it hadn't happened, he would be dead, but he feels guilty about it. He still, he himself is suffering from the Hodor pain.
Oh my God, that is John. That's why they pay John all the money. Yeah. He just figured it all out.
Yeah, so essentially Bran's just trying to remove himself from all of this so as not to affect anything, to let it all play out as he
That's what I
it
think.
Will.
I say. So, bravo
Thank
to
you.
John for putting it
Thank
all together.
Thank you. No, let's just move on because, you know, praise to the face is an open disgrace. we will, though, talk about the thing is about Bran is, does he, who is he responsible to? As a Cass, I can tell you, as a in my clan, the Khaleesi Dothraki from the Mountain Plateau in another country, we are responsible to our clan first. Our cousins, our brothers and sisters, our soy, the people around us, our clan. Is Bran responsible to them anymore? Or as Three-Eyed Raven, is he beyond that? And there will be, it looks like there will be tension and conflict between, to me, and I don't know because I haven't read the last book. I just started listening to it in the garden when I was tying my tomatoes yesterday. There's going to be tension there between, don't you see it? Arya, like, Bran, can't you save us? Don't you know? Can't you tell us? Are you not going to tell Jon that he's Daenerys Stormborn's, what, nephew?
Nephew, yeah.
When is that going to happen?
I think he's trying to make that happen as soon as possible. I mean, he said, he told Sansa, he was like, I have something important to tell Jon. But I think Bran is just going to try to separate himself from the Stark family. But, you know, the Starks
Little
are... But the thing is we saw it with Jon when Ned died in season one, Jon was at the wall. Even though he had took his oath, he tried to leave the Night's Watch. He wanted to be a deserter because he wanted to join Robb and fight for Ned's
because
justice.
Because family was
Exactly.
important.
So we've seen it with all the characters kind of know that they were in a situation where they couldn't put the Starks first and then do it anyways. So I think we might see Bran in a situation where he is the Three-Eyed Raven for so long and he does separate himself, but then maybe in those final moments of the show, he decides to kind of come to the Starks' aid and come to the rescue and do something.
Mm-hmm. And if not, if everyone all the Starks die and they betray each other, why the hell did I waste all this time?
If we don't put aside our enmities and band together, we will die. And then it doesn't matter whose skeleton sits on the Iron Throne.
When the snows fall and the white winds blow, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives.
Here's another thing. In the trailer, you see a dragon flying, and it looks like mist. It looks to me like rather cold mist, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. And on the back of the dragon is a creature, a figure. You cannot tell, but it doesn't have blonde flowing hair. Discuss who's going to ride the dragon, which warg of the Starks, because they're all wargs, right, Will?
Technically, yes.
Who's going to ride it?
Bran. I say Bran.
Because he'll sit in Tyrion's little saddle?
Dragon saddle.
That's a good question. I've thought about it a lot lately. You know, the idea isn't so crazy that if you have three dragons, you need somebody to ride them all. You know, she can't. I think they were talking about that. Her riding one dragon by herself is a liability. So maybe you need more dragon riders.
And where would they come from? Besides the lands beyond the Shire.
Maybe Jon Snow will ride one.
Yeah, well, there is this theory that there's going to be like the... Well, you've heard this theory, I think, that the three dragon riders are going to be Jon, Tyrion, and Daenerys, obviously. Right. And the reason why it's Tyrion is because there is a theory that you have to be Targaryen to ride a dragon. And then there's a theory that Tyrion is a secret Targaryen because his mother, Joanna, the Mad King was in love with Joanna, and so maybe Tyrion was actually born as a Targaryen and not, you know, he's both a Targaryen and a Lannister. And that's why, and then this theory started floating around when, I think it was two seasons ago when we saw Tyrion kind of with the dragons. And they didn't react to him. And everyone was like, oh, Tyrion must be a Targaryen.
Those of you at home who can hear John whimpering, but you've just weeping. Seen his face.
I'm weeping because the way you broke that down, I'm not worthy to be in your presence. You are definitely, you are, go ahead. You want to burn me right now? Put me on a stake. I'll be burned because you are just outstanding.
I've never seen that look of awe.
Came up with that brand future thing.
I haven't had this feeling of awe and wonder since Ronald Reagan said, take down this wall. I swear to God, I feel so good.
Well, I have one last point to throw in before we wrap this thing up, because we all have jobs to actually do. Mm-hmm. Has anybody, what about the, seen the theory about the snow and the ice and how the wall won't matter? Has anybody seen this?
Yeah, because I heard something about this, like the wall is coming down and it, essentially the wall isn't going to matter anymore, something like that, right?
Well, sort of. Yeah. So
Horn was burnt.
Well, remember there's the scene where he's staring into the fire. What's his face?
Gregor Clegane.
Yeah.
Sansa.
Sander. Yeah.
So he's staring into the fire, and he says, I see an arrow point, and I see them coming around the wall.
Right.
Well, next time you watch the opening credits, slow it down when they show the wall. And if you look to the right of the wall, it looks like the water is freezing over. And in his vision, it seemed like the White Walkers were just going around the wall. And the theory is, and they kind of tipped this apparently in the opening credits, that the ocean is freezing there, and so the army won't have to go up the wall. They can go right around it across the ice. Mm-hmm. And that the wall, they're going to spend all this energy trying to fortify the wall, and it's not going to matter that the White Walkers and the undead will come around.
Another question for you. Who dies first? The Red Woman, who's really who's like either some weird hot cougar or a 500-year-old creepy old lady, if she takes the necklace off?
She can be both.
Or,
it's all about lighting.
Or Varys the eunuch, Varys the spider. Who died? And do
so
they, are they?
The first thing that Will texted me after the episode was,
oh, this is cute.
Is Varys going to die? And, okay, so what do you think? Well, you answer this first.
I think Varys dies first, just because I think he's lost all control of his little birds in there. They've actually been exposed to some very dangerous things, as we saw in the last season, murdering, killing, and all this sort of thing. I think that they're not the same children that Varys himself raised, and they could turn on him.
I think Varys and Littlefinger are going to make it to the very end. I really do. Everyone's like, oh, Littlefinger is going to die this season. Varys is going to die this season. I don't think so. I think...
I want Littlefinger to die.
My interpretation of that scene between Melisandre and Varys was that Melisandre was saying how they were both, you know, they're both from Essos. They were both... She was talking about how both of them were common folk, how they had to work their way up to be in the positions that they're in. And for that reason, they have to die in Westeros, because that's where they made names for themselves, was in Westeros.
But all this speculation that we're doing, and informed speculation by these two, I mean, right, Jeff? These
absolutely.
Two are just out of this world.
Jeff, if it wasn't for you guys, it's just John and I giggling about boobs and dragons.
Yeah, and, you know, men in tights and so forth. But now I wonder if speculation even means anything, because I've just seen the stories that HBO has been hacked.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. So there are production leaks, and I think we've avoided these, right? Mm-hmm. Do you know what's going to happen?
He does.
I looked for one.
He's compelled to know.
I am somewhat, actually. I looked it up, and it was one of the things that I'd read about last summer. I'm not going to say anything because everyone will hate me forever, but it is, by definition, a jaw-dropper, so I will say nothing about it, if it's true.
There's another thing you
don't
have to,
you dare spoil this for us.
Never.
Marwa, you have to explore this facet of Will, where he's compelled to know what's going to happen in Game of Thrones.
He's our three-eyed raven.
He wants to. He cannot be surprised by anything. It's a small character flaw in an otherwise brilliant and noble man.
Why, thank you, John.
I'm just saying. For Jeff Carlin, Will Lee, Mara Alteguri, and John Cass. This has been your Chicago Game of Thrones way. And remember this, that there's one character in it at least that we know, if he's not the lord or the hegemon of the Vale, he could be sitting on the fifth floor of City Hall. He is Littlefinger.